Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting shows from radio's golden years. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Coming up in this hour, science fiction. Later on, a broadcast of Lights Out from 1942. But first, it's X-1 with the story A Pail of Air, an NBC broadcast from March 28, 1956.
Countdown to blastoff. X-minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X-minus 1, fire. Far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents Night Story, A Pail of Air, by Fritz Leiber.
It was pretty quiet in the nest. Pa was just sitting by the fire, staring into it like he does these days. And Ma was asleep. That's why it was so quiet. Ma has some pretty bad times when she just screams and screams and huddles back against the blankets that line the nest. Sis was looking at herself in the mirror that hangs next to the bookshelf. I don't know what she finds to look at so long, but then she's a girl. She just looks at herself. Saturdays, when Pa puts a couple of extra lumps of coal on the fire and we take a bath, she looks at herself in the mirror and sometimes she cries. I dropped the book I was reading, and I guess that woke Ma.
Huh? What? Huh?
Pick up the book, Bud.
I'm sorry, Pa.
It's come back. Hasn't it, Alfred? It's come back.
It was just Bud. He dropped his book.
Oh, but it's come back. Well, it's out there now, isn't it? I feel a lot warmer.
No, Ethel.
It's up there in the sky. Just the way it always was. I know. I had a dream, Alfred.
I know, dear. Sis, melt your mother a cup of water.
I'm combing my hair.
Sis.
Oh, all right.
I've got to get up. I know it's there. There'll be crocuses. And the spring bulbs. And daffodils.
What are daffodils, Ma?
Well, Buddy, they're a flower. And they're very pretty. Yellow. On a tall green stalk. Oh, I want to go out. I want to take the children off.
All right now, Ethel. Here's some water.
Come on, children. We'll all go out and you can play in the sun.
Sure, Ma.
Here, drink the water, Ma.
It's cold, Alfred. You wrap on the pipes and make that super send up some more heat.
What's a super, Pa?
It doesn't matter, Bud. There aren't any anymore.
Oh.
Pa, the pail's running low.
Bud, you better get into your things and go out and get an extra pail of air.
There are a couple of pails behind the first blankets.
Go on, get into your things.
It isn't back, is it?
No, it isn't.
There's no sun in the sky. No sun, is there?
No, Ma. What was it like?
The sun.
Sis, don't get your Ma upset.
The sun was yellow. And so bright you couldn't look at it. Burning hot. So hot. But when you stretched out in it, made you feel warm all over. Tingly warm. Been so long since I've been that warm.
I was warm last year on my birthday when Pa put all that extra coal on.
And then every morning it would come out of the east. Make the clouds all pink and yellow. The mist would rise in the ground, and then slowly everything would glow warmer. Warmer. And then it would be up there in the sky. Shining. Warm.
Hurry up, Bud.
I'm almost ready, Pa.
I want the sun. I want the sun back. Alfred, get me the sun.
It's gone, Ethel. There's nothing I can do.
For Christmas? On my birthday?
Go ahead, Bud. Take the big pail and get it full this time. There's no sense in taking the trip for only half a bucket of air.
I spilled it the last time.
It's dark, Alfred, it's dark!
Go ahead, Bud.
Strap down the helmet, will you, sis?
For goodness sake, stand up straight.
Okay. All right, I'll be right back.
Don't hold the blankets open too long. All right, Ethel. They're all safe. Bud will be right back with another pail of air. It's all right.
I went through the 30 or so blankets that Pa hung up to slow down the air escaping from the nest. Of course, I knew the way. I've been going out for air since I was a kid. Still, I get a funny, crawly feeling every time I go out of the nest. You gotta go up to the fifth floor, which is just above the blanket of frozen air. You see, when the earth got cold, all the water in the air froze first and made a blanket about 10 feet thick or so. And then down on top of that dropped all the crystals of frozen air, making another blanket 60 or 70 feet thick. I came out of the window we use on the fifth floor and started to scoop up the air into my pail. I had it about full. Boy, my fingers were getting pretty cold. But I saw something. Hey, that's a light. Oh, darn it, I kicked over the bucket. There can't be a light. Not moving around in a window like that. There can't be. Come on. Pa and Sis are back in the nest. I'm up here, and there can't be anyone else. Everybody on Earth is dead except us. I had an idea how Ma must feel sometimes, the way she sees things. There it was, moving around in the building across the way. I stood there shaking, and I almost froze my feet. I did frost my helmet so solid on the inside I couldn't see anything. So I hurried up and scooped up another bucket of air and headed back for the nest as fast as I could. Pa! Pa, I saw something!
Go on, hang those outside clothes up by the fire.
Phew. Pa, I saw something. I did.
Shh. Mother's quiet now. Don't upset her.
Pa, it was a light.
Wait till I get this air next to the fire. Give me the cloth, sis.
Shall I put another lump of coal on, Pa?
No. The oxygen from this bucket will get the fire up when it begins to melt. There.
Pa, I'm trying to tell you. I saw something up there. Light.
There's lots of light.
I know what stars look like, Dopey. They're big, steady white lights in the sky. This was down here in a building.
What is it? Alfred, what is it?
Nothing, Ethel. Now, what is this, Bud?
Well, first I thought it was a lady, a young lady. I mean it. Like in one of those old magazines. I thought I saw it in a window. But then all I saw was a light.
You watched it for some time, son?
Long enough for it to pass five windows and go to the next floor.
And it didn't look like stray electricity?
No, Pa, I know what that looks like.
Or a star refracted through an icicle? Sometimes if you catch it at the right angle...
Pa, honest, I never saw anything like it before.
Huh. All right. I'll go out with you and you show me.
No, Alfred. You can't go and leave us alone, not both of you.
It's all right. We'll be right back.
Here's your helmet, Pa.
There's something out there. I've always known there was something out there waiting to get it.
Hand me my glove.
Something that's part of the cold. Hates all warmth. Wants to destroy the nest. Been watching us all this time. Now it's coming after us. And it'll get you. And then it'll come for me. Oh, don't go. Alfred, please don't go.
Everything will be all right. Now, sis.
Yes, Pa?
You come watch the fire. Keep an eye on that air, too. If it gets too low or doesn't seem to be boiling fast enough, get another bucket behind the blanket.
Alfred, don't go.
I'll take care of it, Pa. Could there really be anybody out there?
I don't see how. We heard the last radio voices a year before Bud was born. There hasn't been anything since then.
Then what could it be?
I don't know. Probably just a reflection. An ice crystal cracking. Come on, Bud. Get your helmet on.
It's funny. When I go out alone, I'm not scared or anything. But when I go out with Pa, I always hang on to his belt like I used to when I was a little kid. Habit, I guess. It's the same no matter what trip we take. On the fifth floor, we stopped to rest just before we went out. We were in the room with the frozen people. The lady sitting looking at the door. The man holding his hands over that funny metal thing Pa calls a radiator. It was like a fire, I guess, but I didn't see any place for the cold. We put our helmets together so we could talk.
Catch your breath, son.
Paul, would it be possible, I mean, for any of the frozen people to come to life? Like the ones down in the basement around the furnace when we go for water?
No, they're dead. They were caught too quickly when it happened.
Oh, Paul, how do we know we're the only ones?
We don't, but, well, there's a feeling you get. Because it's always night. There used to be some of that feeling every night in the old days. But the sun chased it away every morning. You wouldn't know about that. You weren't born when the dark star pulled us away from the sun. You wouldn't know unless you'd seen the sun.
I've seen the sun. It's that big star at the end of the Big Dipper. I've seen it.
It isn't the same. Come on. We're wasting time.
I don't know what the city looked like in the old days, but now it's beautiful. The starlight lets you see it pretty well. We're up on a hill, and the plain slopes down away from us. Some taller buildings push up out of the feathery plain, topped by rounded caps of air crystals. Some of them run aslant because a lot of the buildings are badly twisted by the quakes and everything when a dark star pulled the earth away from the sun. That's why Pa can't seal up the nest airtight. The building's twisted too bad. Besides, we have to keep the chimney open. We touched our helmets together so we could talk.
Is that where you saw it, son?
It isn't there anymore. But it feels different. I mean, as if there's something out here, waiting.
Bud, if you see something like that again, don't tell the others.
Huh? Well, why not?
Well, you're more sort of nervous these days, and we all have all the feeling of safety we can give her. Once it was when your sister was born, I was ready to give up and die, but your mother kept me trying. Another time, she kept the fire going a whole week all by herself when I was sick.
She couldn't do that now. Not the way she is.
But you know that game we sometimes play, tossing a ball around? Well, courage is like a ball. A person can hold it only so long, and then he's got to toss it to someone else. When it's tossed your way, you've got to catch it and hold it tight. And hope there'll be someone else to toss it to when you get tired of being brave.
Yeah, I guess so.
Come on. We'll fill up the pails and get back.
But what about whatever it is out here?
We'll just have to wait and see. Come on. Before the helmets frost over.
It's pretty hard to hide your feelings in the nest. I mean, there's just room for the four of us. The blanket overhead just touches when Pa stands up straight. The floor is all covered with thick, woolly rugs. Pa says it's inside a much bigger room, but I've never seen the real walls or ceiling. Well, anyway, Pa laughed and kidded about what I'd seen. He said I had an imagination, but we could tell he took it serious. It was Sunday morning by the clocks that Pa kept all wound up on the shelf. So it was time for the story. We all sat around in a circle the way we always do. Except I noticed that Pa casually took a hammer from the shelf and put it beside him. I always liked the story. Of course, Sis and I know it by heart for now. I mean, every Sunday since we were kids. But every once in a while, Pa surprises us by telling it a little different. Or throwing in some extras. It starts out with a song. Ma used to sing it, but she forgets a word sometimes. And now Pa sings it mostly.
Oh, beautiful for spacious skies, for amber waves of grain, thy purple mountain majesties above the fruited plain.
Of course, the words don't mean anything. I mean, the skies are spacious enough. But there aren't any waves of grain. And the plain is all covered with a blanket of frozen air. But it's part of the story ceremony, and Pa likes it. He says it reminds him of the old days. After the song, Pa starts the story.
In the days of my youth, the sun hung above, golden and warm, and the earth was fruitful and multiplied, and the fields were green, and the day was glorious, and the wind blew across the hilltops, and air was free and good to breathe.
That's the part of the story I like best, about how it was with the sun nice and warm. That's hard to believe, all those people living without having to worry about cold and air, never waking up sweating and screaming because you dreamed the fire went out. It's impossible to believe, but Pa was a good storyteller, and he made it seem real.
And then the dark star came rushing out of space. In the beginning, they tried to keep the news from the people, but when the floods and the earthquakes started, the truth came out. At first, they thought the dark star would hit the sun. And then they were afraid it would strike the earth itself. But it didn't. It only came close.
Pa tells it like the sun and the dark star fought for the earth like two dogs over a bone. I know what he means, because I've seen a picture of a dog in a magazine. And then the dark star won and carried us off. But the sun kept the moon. There were earthquakes and floods. Pa says that mountains fell and oceans slopped over. Oceans, that's a lot of melted water lying around loose. It's hard to imagine. Pa says it was so. Then came the open question time in the story. Sis asked a question about what girls wore for clothes. And I asked Pa how people acted in those days when the earth was twisted and jerked almost apart.
Well, Bud, I was too busy to notice much. A friend of mine, Dr. Weisbrot, and Kelly, the geophysicist, and Walters, the astronomer, we knew what was going to happen. And we were working to fix up a place with airtight walls and insulation and big supplies of food and bottled air. But the place got smashed up in the earthquakes and they were all killed. So I put the nest together at the last minute in the living room of our apartment. It's a four-room apartment.
You must have seen some of the people, like the frozen ones downstairs.
At that time, Bud, I only thought of one thing. Your mother and survival. If I had stopped to think, I wouldn't have even tried to make the nest. It would have seemed ridiculous. Blankets and a coal fire against the cold and vacuum of space. But I didn't think.
I survived.
I wasn't listening carefully as Pa went on about the building of the nest. I kept thinking about something else. About that light I'd seen outside. I kept asking myself, what if the frozen people were coming to life? What if they were like the liquid helium that crawls toward heat when it should be frozen solid? What if something were coming from the dark star to get us? Something making the frozen people move, not by themselves. That would fit with what I'd seen. A young lady's face and the moving light. I sat there and shivered, thinking of the frozen people with minds from the dark star creeping, crawling, snuffing their way, following the heat to the nest. And then, over from beyond the blankets, I thought I heard a tiny noise.
So I asked myself then, what's the use of going on? Why prolong a doomed existence of hard work and cold and loneliness? The human race is done. The earth is done. Why not give up, I asked myself.
And then I did hear the noise, louder this time, a kind of shuffling tread coming closer.
And then I got the answer. The earth's always been a lonely place millions of miles from the next planet. And no matter how long the human race might have lived, the end would have come some night. Those things don't matter. What matters is that life is good. There's a lovely texture, like some rich cloth of fur or the petals of flowers. Crocuses, daffodils. For the fires glow. And that's as true for the last man as the first.
Still, those steps kept shuffling closer. Pa was talking and Ma was dreaming with her eyes closed. And Sis was looking at herself sideways in the mirror. And I was the only one who heard the noise. A noise outside.
So right then and there, I told myself that I was going on as if we had all eternity ahead of us. I'd have children, and I'd teach them all I could. I'd get them to read books, try to enlarge and seal the nest. I'd try to keep everything beautiful and alive. I'd keep alive my feeling of wonder, even at the cold and the dark and the distant stars.
Pa, Pa, I hear.
I know.
What is it, Alfred? What is it? What's going on? Oh, you've got to tell me.
Oh, I'm scared.
Quiet. But you heard it?
Uh-huh. Kind of shuffling. Coming toward the nest.
Oh.
Sis, take care of your mother.
It's all right, uh-huh. Ma. Lie down. Come on.
I'll take the hammer. You take the hatchet.
What is it, Pa? What is it?
I don't know. Listen.
It's closer.
Oh, Mush.
Pa, the blanket is moving.
Ready with your axe.
Hello.
Ah!
Who's there? Is there somebody in there?
Come in. It's all right.
They're alive. Alive.
Who are you?
Alfred. Alfred Hutchinson. Dr. Alfred Hutchinson. You can take off your helmets in here.
But the air.
We have air.
Oh, we bring it in pails.
Come on, Ralph. Let's take off the helmets.
Oh, it's impossible.
Where are you from? We thought we were the only ones.
Los Alamos.
The nuclear laboratory.
Yes, that's right. We get our power from the reactor, using the stockpile of bombs for fuel.
Then there are others. There are other men. There are other men.
Pa, is it all right? Should I put the axe down?
Yes, it's all right. You can put it down.
You mean you come from another nest?
It's a little bigger than this. We've got a small airtight city with airlocks.
We generate our electricity, food from hydroponics.
I can't believe it. I can't.
I can't believe this. It's impossible. You can't maintain an air supply without hermetic sealing. It's impossible.
Oh, no, no, it's simple. As long as you keep the fire going to melt the air, and enough air boiling to keep the fire burning.
How did you come here? Why?
Well, we keep scouting around for survivors. There are a number of colonies, Brookhaven, Oak Ridge, and Harwell in England, and the Argonne Laboratory in France. We didn't expect to find anything in this city, though. But our detectors picked up a heat trace, so we tracked it down.
Alfred, you're forgetting your manners. We have company.
Of course, of course. Sis, throw a handful of coal on the fire.
Pa, a whole handful?
Doesn't matter now. And Bud, bring out another pail of air.
Why, it's incredible.
And you have laboratories and transport?
We only have a two-seater scout, but if we rip out the bulkhead to the storage compartment, we can make it all right.
We can have you back at Los Alamos in 4 hours.
What's the matter?
I guess we really hadn't thought about it that way.
But, I wouldn't know how to act there. And besides, I haven't any clothes.
Just doesn't seem right to let this fire go out. It's been 18 years. Burning every minute.
But you can't stay here.
Ralph.
But after all...
Ralph.
Oh. Look, Dr. Hutchinson, we'll go out to the ship and bring back a small power heater. I know this is very sudden and upsetting to you. You need a chance to... adjust.
We'll be back in a few minutes. It's incredible. Buckets of air.
Well,
they didn't think the nest smelled so good. I could tell.
She had a wave in her hair. Did you see that? And lipstick.
I suppose we have to decide what to do.
Pa, at Los Alamos and those other places, there'll be lots of people, won't there?
Yes.
I mean, not just your father or a brother.
That's right.
Boys?
I suppose so. But somehow I feel a little empty.
Alfred. Alfred, it's different now that we know others are alive. You don't have to feel the responsibility for keeping the human race going.
Pa, I'd like to see those rockets and laboratories. Wouldn't you, Pa?
I suppose so.
It won't be easy leaving the nest. I mean, it's just right and there's only 4 of us. It's kind of a scary idea. Big place with a lot of strangers...
You'll get over that feeling, son. The trouble with the world was that it kept getting smaller and smaller till it ended with just the nest. Now it'll be good to have a real, huge world again. The way it was in the beginning.
And so... we're going to leave the nest in the morning by Pa's clocks. We've got the power heater going now. Seems funny to be this warm when it isn't Christmas or somebody's birthday. But still, it's hard for me to realize that this is the last time I'll go out of the nest. Through all the blankets to get a pail of air.
You have just heard X-1 presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features the Edward M. Ludwig story, A Coffin for Jacob. With never a moment to rest, the pursuit through space felt like a game of hounds and hares. Or was it follow the leader? Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand today. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you A Pale of Air, a story from the pages of Galaxy written by Fritz Leiber and adapted for radio by George Lefferts. Featured in the cast were Ronnie Liss, Pamela Fitzmaurice, Richard Hamilton, Eleanor Phelps, Rita Lloyd, and Joe DeSantis. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production.
X-1, on Tuned to Yesterday from March 28, 1956 on NBC. The story first premiered in the December 1951 issue of Galaxy Magazine and was written by Fritz Leiber Jr., not to be confused with his father, Fritz Leiber, who was a Shakespearean actor. And out of the many movies he appeared in, he was able to get the young Fritz Leiber Jr. on set and in the motion picture The Hunchback of Notre Dame in 1939, which starred Charles Laughton. Leiber Sr. played the part of the old nobleman. This is an hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now an Armed Forces Radio Service rebroadcast of the program Lights Out and the story Revolt of the Worms, which was first heard on CBS on October 13, 1942.
A journal of facts. Think how it began, why it's happening. Journal of facts until the walls crash in and the thick flesh. Charles Prentice, there's a fact. Chemist and fool. Fool.
Run away
from reality. Run away.
You mean you're going to live in this car for 7 or 8 hours?
Yes, Claire, I remember. You did say that. And I said...
Of course we're going to live here.
It's ideal for my work.
But we're so far away from everything.
So far away from what? Your friends? My friends?
All right, Charles. Whatever you say, Charles.
You never disagreed with me, did you, Claire?
Why, it's so quiet up here, it's almost as if we were out of this world.
Yes, I remember. Young Jackson, you did say that.
I like working with you, sir. Why, up here, it's almost as if we were out of this world.
Out of the world. I wanted to be out of the world.
Hide from whom? Self.
What are you going all the way up there for, Prentice?
To do my work, of course.
Propagating new varieties of roses, you?
I'll do what I please. I'll do what I please.
But, Prentice, to leave suddenly like this, it doesn't make sense. Roses are fine, but a scientist of your ability, in my opinion...
I'm not interested in your opinions. I'll do what I please. You hear me? Do what I please.
Do what I please.
Yes, sir. Everything's ready, sir. Greenhouse all ready for you, sir.
1 week ago, Wednesday.
Does the wind always blow up here, Charles?
Huh?
I said the wind. Does it always blow like that?
Why?
Sort of frightening.
Might be less frightening than the things that are happening back in the city.
I suppose so.
I know so. Where's that boy? Jackson.
Yes, sir?
The phosphates, are they ready yet?
Not quite, sir.
Well, get them ready. Every one of the plants. We work late tonight. Very late.
Work late and hard. That was the answer to everything. Roses. Yes, develop the greatest rose in the world. That would be my answer to them. While they planned to bomb and burn, I'd develop the largest rose the world had ever known. And when the world settled down again, I'd come back and bring the rose to them.
My plan. Why did it go wrong?
Claire. Why did it go wrong? Claire.
No. Dead. You're dead. They killed you.
Dead as I'll be dead.
If I could only think, why did it go wrong?
Well, I put the solution that's left over, Mr. Prentice.
Yes, I do remember. That was it.
Gosh, Mr. Prentice, I'm trying to understand, but
I'm so tired.
You must keep working. The only salvation is to work.
What's salvation got to do with roses?
Don't be impertinent. Do your work.
Yes, sir.
2 cc for each plant, and careful, don't let any of it touch the stem.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
You weren't very happy, were you, Jackson? The things you couldn't understand.
It isn't that I don't want to work, Mr. Prentice. It's just that I'm all mixed up. These roses, why do I have to pour this stuff on them every hour on the hour? It doesn't make sense. Hormones? Sure, I know what they are. Sure, I know what they're for. Make us grow and everything. I get it. That's what you try to do with the roses. Make them grow fast and big. But how do you know these hormones will work on plants, Mr. Prentice?
Questions, everlasting questions. But now I ask them. Why did it go wrong?
Thursday.
What do I remember?
Where will I throw the hormone mixture that's left over, Mr. Prentice? Mr. Prentice, I said, where will I throw the hormone solution that's left...
Go away. Can't you see I'm working?
Yes, sir. Yes.
Yes, I remember.
Friday.
What of Friday?
Friday night.
Claire?
Yes?
Is that you?
Yes, Gerald.
What are you doing walking in the dark?
Oh, it's a lovely night.
Romantic, at your age.
Why, I just like the night.
You women, come back to the house.
All right.
Crazy walking around in the dark. What's the matter with you? Can't you walk? If I hadn't caught you, you would...
It's slippery.
What are you talking about?
It's all slippery around here.
Don't talk foolishness.
But it is.
Why, George, you're right.
Well, what...
Stand still. I'll light a match. I had some. Yes, now we'll see what...
Charles!
Stop grabbing.
What?
Worms. Well, can't you see? Just ordinary earthworms. Night crawlers. We just walked over a few of them.
Oh,
you women with your fears and your squeamishness. Walked on a few worms and you make more noise and more fuss.
Yes, I remember. Friday night.
The extra hormone solution. Where will I throw it, Mr. Prentice? Mr. Prentice, where will I throw the extra hormone solution?
And then the night.
Jackson. Jackson, where are you? Jackson, I told you to stay in the house. Where are you? It's time to feed the greenhouse plants. Jackson!
He's not here, Charles.
What? Claire, you startled me walking up behind me.
Oh, I didn't mean to.
That infernal boy, where is he? Have you seen him?
Well, he's not in the house.
But I told him not to go out. I told him only an hour ago he's got to work all night. The plants must be watered every hour on the hour.
Well, he went out.
Well, why didn't you stop him? Now I have to go chase after him. Jackson, are you out there? Come in.
Charles, what...
Well, what did you think it was? Thunder, starting to rain. Shut the door. Shut the door, I say.
But the boy...
If he hasn't the sense to come in out of the rain, it's just too bad. I've got enough with worrying about my roses without worrying about him. And don't you go out after him. He'll come back.
Saturday night, and when it was day again.
Charles, wake up. Please wake up.
Where?
You're on the couch. You fell asleep on the couch. Charles, get up right away.
What's the matter with you? Why should I get up? What difference does it make?
Listen to me, please. The boy, he isn't back yet.
What?
Jackson, he isn't back yet. Charles, where can he be? The storm... You slept. I waited.
Wait a minute. Have you looked in his room?
I just came from there. Charles, where could he have gone to? All through the storm.
Oh, stop talking so much. Let me get up and go and see. Why didn't you wake me up? Why did you let me sleep?
Well, I kept waiting by the window. I must have fallen asleep, too. I opened my eyes. It was day. Oh, Charles.
No, stop it. Crazy young fool. So we spent the night outside. So what's the difference? Teach him a lesson. Well, no wonder he isn't back yet. Fog like this. It's as bad as night.
Charles, I'm...
All right. What am I supposed to do? Go wandering through the fog like a bloodhound, like a fool? Don't worry. He'll be back.
Mm-hmm. You never came back, did you, Jackson? When the sun came out, and that everlasting wind came and lifted the fog.
Charles! Charles, come here!
Where are you?
Back in the house, Charles, come quickly!
What is it? What do you want now? The boy isn't around. I've looked everywhere. Now what do you
want? Charles, what's happened, Betsy?
What?
Well, look at the ground.
What in the... Who plowed this ground up?
Plowed?
Yes, certainly plowed. Can't you see some crazy, drunken fool plowed up the ground?
But during the night, Charles, how could that be?
You believe what you see, don't you? It's that boy.
What do you...
Yes, that Jackson. Went crazy. Found a plow, tore up the ground, and ran away. Went out of his mind. That's it. The boy's gone crazy.
Then that night, that same night, I went back to my work. Sunday night.
Charles, can I speak to you? Charles, please stop your work and talk to me.
Haven't you lived with me enough years to know I don't like being interrupted when I'm working?
But I'm frightened.
Are you, really?
Charles, stop it.
Are you out of your mind?
Yes, maybe I am.
What did you say?
Maybe I am crazy. All right. That's the only way I could have lived with you all these years.
What?
Endured your selfishness. Your unbelievable selfishness. Everything's for you.
For me?
For 20 years, everything for you. Your work, your pleasures, and what you think, what you want. Everything for you. Nothing for anyone else.
Will you shut up?
The gentle little Mr. Prentice. The scientist. The good husband who never lifts his voice.
I am a scientist.
Mother in heaven, I'd rather be married to a fool with a heart in him than you. You haven't got a heart. You never had a heart. You've got a piece of ice inside of you with your ego frozen in it. It's you, and no one else. And that boy can be dead out there, and you don't care. And I can be dead, and you don't care. As long as you're safe and doing what you want to do.
Will you go away and let me go on with my work?
Charles, I'm frightened. That boy. And now there are noises.
I'm asking you for the last time to go away and let me do my work.
Listen to me. You've been out here all night, but I've been in the back of the house alone, and I've been listening. I didn't want to come out here, but I had to. Charles, all the things I just said, I meant them. For years I've meant them. All right, that doesn't matter, but I tell you this. There's something outside the house. Find out what it is, Charles.
20 years ago, I thought you were an irrational woman. I thought I'd trained you out of that irrationality. I was wrong. I'll humor you just this once. Where are these noises?
At the back of the house.
The lantern. Hand it to me.
Yes.
Thank you. You're frightened. You don't have to go with me.
I want to know.
What? That you're a suddenly loquacious fool? Well, so what am I supposed to hear? There's nothing. Hello out there. Hello. Well, what now?
Listen.
To that.
Listen.
To what?
Well, I thought I...
You heard the wind whistling through the cracks in your brain. Come in my house.
Charles, wait.
Wait for...
You hear?
Yes. So what? Give me the lantern. If it's that boy...
It could be him, couldn't
it? That crazy young fool playing practical jokes. If I get around the corner of the house and find him up to...
Oh!
What's going on here?
Charles, something moving under the ground.
Yes. So dark. Can't quite make out.
Charles, what is it?
I don't know. Animal of some sort?
Take me back to the house.
Go yourself. Moon will come out of clouds. See what this is.
Oh, give me the lantern, Charles.
No, I want to see. The house is back there. Turn around and go back to it. Go ahead.
All right.
Something burrowing. Then old moon come out. Let's see. There, coming out. Now I'll see what... Holes. Holes in the ground. All over. What are they? Who? Bomb craters? But that isn't possible. No. animal burrows. But what animal could make a hole 4 feet across? What animal...
Claire, where are you? Claire, so dark, can't see you. Claire, where are you? Claire, where are you?
Claire, where are you? Claire, where are you?
Yes, Claire, I ran through the night looking for you. The echo of my voice is still in my ears, looking for you. And the moon was under the clouds, and I couldn't see, and I couldn't find
you.
And then I did. You had fallen into one of those craters, into one of those holes in the ground. I couldn't see you, but I could hear you. But which one of the holes? They were all over, ground pockmarked with them. I ran around in the dark. I could hear you, but couldn't find you. And then the moon. It was out again. Blast the moon. Why did it come out? If it hadn't come out, I wouldn't have seen. And my head. Stop it. Stop it, Claire. I can still hear you. I can still see you.
Your body down in that hole. And as I ran toward you, suddenly I saw that something else was coming toward you. Something that glistened wet in the moonlight. Something long and slimy. A great twisting snake. Yet not a snake. Not a snake.
And the fear in me made me fall to the ground. And I saw as I lay there, I saw the thing moved toward the hole in the ground as if you weren't there. As if it were blind and couldn't see.
Yes, like a great blind worm. It was a worm. A worm 10, 20,
no, 30 feet long, crawling in fright to its home in the ground. And it moved toward you, covered you, crushed you. You're dead, Claire. You've been dead for 2 days. Why should I tear out of my memory all the horror of how you died, of how young Jackson must have died?
Well, I saw the extra hormone solution, Mr. Prentice.
Yes, that's very funny, isn't it, Jackson? I ran away and I was going to bring back to the world the greatest rose, but I brought back the greatest worms. The hormones you threw away, soaked into the ground and into them. Hundreds of little worms burrowing under the ground, soaking into their flesh, into their life process, miraculously accelerating the growth of them until overnight they grew and grew without limit into those terrible horrors. And they're still growing. I could hear them for the last 2 days, squirming around the house and over it. Great, monstrous pieces of slimy flesh squirming and writhing. Hundreds of them. Thousands of them. Burrowing under the ground and at night coming out of the ground. I have seen them. A sea of flesh. A sea of worms. Yes, I hear you out there. You worms. You were under the ground and now there's no room underground for you. So you've come out of the ground. The world was yours first, so now you're going to take it back again. The world. For the worm.
You're under the house. You're lifting it. The walls will fall and crush me, and I'll be dead. And I want to be dead.
Yes, no, I know why this is happening to me. I thought I could run away from the world and what's happening in the world.
You hear that, you worms out there? I thought I could run away.
I'm very tired. Just sit here and wait. Wait for them. I know how I'll die. The walls falling. Crushing. Ooh, window. Something behind me. Oh, a worm at the window. Head lifting. He's falling in. And another following. And another. They're filling room all around me. The worms. The worms. Around me. Covering me. Cold flesh. Wet flesh. The worms.
This is Arch Obler again. Thanks to Edgar Barrier, Barbara Luddy, and Olin Sule. The sound was by Bud Tollefson, music by Joe Lay, and the engineer was Dave Diller with Byron Kane announcer. Now, I want to talk to you about our next play. It's about a gentleman who may be slightly familiar to you who gets himself dropped into the ocean in a hollow steel ball, and then But first, I've got to wait for a short message. Again. About next week's play. Yes, this very familiar fellow gets himself dropped into the ocean among the giant crabs and the playful octopi of the deep sea. And when our adventurer gets to the bottom, but that's going to have to wait until our next play.
Stories of the Unusual. This is the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
Lights Out, on Tuned to Yesterday, from October 13, 1942, an Armed Forces Radio Service rebroadcast of that CBS program. Wrapping up this hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levoner. Thanks for tuning in.